The first stage is called preparing, and this is the time during which children get their voice ready for speech. The infant vocal development research indicates that newborns have the ability to make a speech-like sound, and it is called the quasi-resonant nuclei. Now, that's a big term for a very tiny sound. The quasi-resonant nuclei sounds like this. And those of you who have had little babies, you recognize that sound. It's the sound that you hear when they're not crying, when they're not fussing, when they're awake and alert and content. That's the main idea here. When content, a little newborn baby will produce a speech-like sound that is really the core of all speech that he will develop from that point on. The quasi-resonant nuclei is defined as a high, mid, unrounded, nasalized vowel of short duration. High referring to the jaw, in other words, the jaw position is high. Mid referring to the tongue, meaning the middle of the tongue is its highest point. Unrounded referring to the lips. The lips are neither rounded nor retracted. They're basically inactive. Nasalized, meaning that the velopharyngeal mechanism is not fully operational, and so therefore the sound sounds not fully oral, but partially nasal. And it is a vowel, more a vowel than a consonant, and it is of very short duration. When you hear a child produce that sound, you know he's trying to talk to you. And a parent of a little child, a newborn child, will be very happy when they hear the sound, because again, it's not fussing, and it's something the parent can understand. Oh, he's talking to me. And a mother who's a really good responder to her child, or father too, will respond to that sound as if it were speech. So you'll hear dialogues like this. The child will say, and the mom will say, oh, really? And the child will say, and the mom will say, I know. I agree with you. I know that that's the way it is. And you'll have these totally made-up dialogues that are totally in control of the mother's utterances, but you see the child participating with that sound. Now, that sound, while very adorable in a one-month-old child, can be very obnoxious in a 3- or 4-year-old child who has that as their only sound and who's producing it whenever they want something or they're demanding something. We hear this often amongst children who have no speech whatsoever. They're trying to produce some speech. They just don't have the ability to move the jaw, lips, tongue. They can't control airflow. They can't control the velum. Nothing in terms of the speech subsystems is operational. And so therefore, the only sound that they have available to them is this so-called quasi-resonant nuclei. The quasi-resonant nuclei may be a sound that we'd like to ignore, but actually it is a sound that we should pay very close attention to. Children who have so little speech that this is the only sound they have, and this may be your child, not only need to produce this sound, but they need to produce it in excess, in such a way that they learn to control it. They need to use this sound in a way that they can discover their own voice, for this is what the infant is doing during this time. He's producing this sound, and in doing so, he's discovering his own voice. He's discovering what it feels like as it resonates in his chest, what it feels like as it resonates in his throat and in his nose and in the rest of his face, and he's hearing what it sounds like. He's also looking at how other people respond to this sound, and he's making judgments about dialogue and communication by practicing this sound. We can encourage this sound in our clients by utilizing therapy tools in a variety of ways, and you'll see them listed in your outline or in your textbook there, and I'm going to run through them. Speech activation toys is the first one listed. These are toys that respond to voice. For example, in my office, I have what I call a frog band. It's a little group of 6 frogs. Each one of them is playing an instrument, and it responds to voice, so that when you make voice into the toy, the frogs hop back and forth, kind of, you know, bounce back and forth, and they look like they're playing their instruments. Now, this was a toy that was designed to sit up in front of a stereo speaker so that when you're playing music, it looks like this little band is playing the music. It's quite an interesting toy. But children love it because they can make sound to the frog band, and the frogs can bop around, and they can actually control the sound of, or the activity of the frogs by making their sound. There's also a dinosaur band that operates in the same way. There's a toy that's a butterfly that sits under a glass dome that when you make sound, the butterfly wings flap, and so forth. There are other toys that produce voice back to you when you make sound. These are all speech activation toys, meaning that the toy will actually activate when the child produces speech. These are great toys to use in therapy because they encourage children to make more sound. And one of the things that we want to do at these very early levels is we don't want to teach them new sounds yet. We simply want them to produce more of the sounds that they can do. And that's how speech activation toys will work for you. Other toys are listed that are very useful for us. For example, number two, kazoos. Kazoos are fantastic because not only are they cheap and easy to find, but they only make their own sound when we produce sound into them. Now, if I were simply to blow in a kazoo, it wouldn't make any sound. So the kazoo is fantastic because it forces the child to make the voice that he can. Now, children that are operating at this level have very little control of their own voice, and they usually have very weak voices. So if you give your child a kazoo to use, you may hear something like this. Now, that's a child who can produce a little bit of voice, but not enough to activate the kazoo. And if that's all the voice that they can produce, you can imagine how they're trying to produce sounds. They're trying to produce sounds and words the same way. So kazoos are fantastic. Flexible tubes are also fantastic to use. Any flexible tube can be placed one end at the mouth and one end at the ear, the child's ear, the child's mouth, in order to amplify their sound so that no matter how little sound they actually make, they can hear themselves and they can tune their ear to their own sound. It helps us do what we call making the sound salient, making the sound stand out, and that's a way to encourage more sound production. Funnels work the same way. Any old kitchen funnel that you find, or funnels that are sold to put oil in car engines and so forth, when cleaned up and sanitized, these tools can be very useful in therapy, again, amplifying the child's voice. Small echo chambers, these are things like small boxes or bowls or pots and pans. And we're all familiar with little kids playing with the bowls and the pots and the pans and holding the bowl up to the face and making sound into them and hearing the sound echo back. Perhaps you even remember doing this as a child while you're drinking your glass of milk or juice. After the juice is gone and you still have the cup at your mouth, I don't know if you can remember making sound into there and hearing it echo back to yourself, to your own ears. Again, making your own sound more salient. Large echo chambers would be like big cardboard boxes, like refrigerator boxes or stove boxes or closet spaces or tables with blankets laid over them, like children's fort kind of spaces. These large echo chambers are fantastic for a child to practice his own sound. Synchronous vocalizations refers to us making the same sound with the child that he's making, so that if our client has a kazoo and he's going woo, 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 into the kazoo, we also have a kazoo and we're making that sound at the same time. And we see this all the time with parents of newborn children. When their children are making that quasi-resonant nuclei, we often see a mother or a father talking back to the child with that same vocal quality. So we hear the parent going, "Oh, I know. Yes. Oh, you're so sweet." And you have this lilting voice that's being reflected back to the child. This is synchronous vocalization, and this is a powerful tool that we have for helping children learn about their own sounds and for them to be encouraged to produce more sound. Mutual imitation is us making the child sound, but taking it in turn. So making the sound back to the child, but doing it after he has completed his turn. So the child says, "Huh," and we say, "Huh," back to him. Mutual imitation is the most powerful when we imitate back to the child exactly what he's saying. Now, I'm going through each of these techniques very specifically during this first stage. We won't be reviewing this material over and over and over and over again. We will simply be talking about modifications on these basic techniques. So this these first eight techniques that we've described are foundational for the entire program. And now we're going to go through the next set, 9 through 14, and talk about how each of those are useful at this stage, and then keep in mind they're functional for us throughout the whole program. Number 9 is singing. Children who are newborns, of course, can't sing. But when we sing to children and we model that, it encourages them to make that sound. Now, older children, 3, 4, 5 years of age, who have very limited vocal skill and who primarily produce quasi-resonant nuclei, often will be encouraged to do so when they're in group singing situations. So you may observe your nonverbal child sitting in circle time, in song singing time, and participating in the songs. So for example, while the children are singing the ABC song, your child is going, Now this is simply the quasi-resonant nuclei being used in a singing context. And again, a newborn child wouldn't have the cognitive skills to be able to participate in that type of thing. But our clients do, and this is a great kind of classroom activity to encourage a child to participate in, because again, it exercises that his own sound, his quasi-resonant nuclei. Number 10, many children produce this their only sound during roughhouse play and during gross motor play. You may notice that many of your silent little apraxic children are incredibly vocal while they're out on the playground or when they're in occupational or physical therapy or when they're in their PE classes because this is a time when they can move around more, they're crawling, they're jumping, they're working in large spaces, and those are the types of things that encourage their vocal sounds. So this is a good place where we can dovetail with occupational and physical therapy and with classroom aids and so forth, and we can say, okay, while he's out on the playground, we want to hear sound out of him. We don't care if he says anything specific, but we want him to use this time to exercise his voice, because after he comes in and it's snack time, he's going to be expected to be a little bit more quiet. So if you can get him to be really noisy during this time, this will be really great for his speech. Horns, whistles, and sirens are toys that don't require voice use, and it may seem odd that they're in here. But horns, whistles, and sirens are excellent ways in which young children learn to control airflow. And underneath all voice is air. In order to speak, hello, how are you? Anything that we speak, we have to be able to inhale before we speak and exhale during the process of speaking. And horns and whistles and sirens are not presented for the goal of learning to use the horn, the whistle, or the siren, but in order to teach the child to inhale more deeply and to exhale more strongly. For example, I have a horn here. This is a little train horn. I haven't seen many of these around, but it's one that I found. It has a high, squeaky noise, which attracts many children. And the thing I love about this horn is that it takes very little air to blow to make it sound. So it's an easy one. Another train horn I have is a little more common. You'll see it around. It also requires very little air, but can function better as time goes by and the child puts more air through it. Some horns, now this one's going to be loud. This is a party horn, a party favor horn. These horns, you see these around, you know, New Year's Eve and for birthday parties. These require a tremendous force of exhalation in order to sound. And many of our children, when first introduced to these types of toys, will not be able to produce sound in them at all. So there are certain horn programs that are out there that you can purchase. Many of the speech supply companies, catalog companies, produce many of these horns and distribute them. And what I would suggest that you do is just take your horns and try each one of them and kind of put them from left to right in a line and from easiest to most difficult. And what we're talking about here is airflow. How much force of exhalation does it require? Ones that are very easy to sound should be used early in the program, and ones that are more difficult can be used later. Horns and whistles and sirens also require the use of a specific amount of lip control, and that is also a factor, but we're going to talk about that later. A siren is a tool, is a blow toy that you can make sound whether you're blowing into it or sucking air through it. So for example, the classic lip siren, I'll produce it here. Uh, These things produce sound both when you're exhaling and when you're inhaling. And by far, for me, they're the most important tool because they really teach the child how to inhale. And while we're focusing on exhalation with all the other toys, the siren is the one that really helps make salient the whole process of inhaling. The last three items have to do more with oral motor control, and we are not in this program going to spend a significant amount of time talking about oral motor control and oral tactile sensitivity, except to list them here and to describe them very briefly. First of all, sensitivity. Many of our clients are either overly sensitive to touch in the mouth or they're undersensitive to touch in the mouth, and therefore they have a difficult time handling some of these blow toys because they just can't tolerate them in their mouths. So we have to take this into play if this is the case, especially in the case of hypersensitivity. If this is the case, we have to do other kinds of techniques to help normalize that sensitivity so that they can tolerate these things in their mouths. Oral strength is also an issue, again, lip control especially. Children with very little lip movement and with very little jaw movement usually have a hard time with these tools. The basic principle is that the larger the mouth opening, the better for these kids, and also the least amount of airflow that's needed for them, the better they will do, because you can still make some of these whistles and horns and so forth sound even though you aren't able to achieve lip closure around them. And then 14th, the last item, is dialogue. And that means that with babies and with our older children who have these kinds of problems, we're going to be helping them use their sound in dialogue. So, for example, the child who only has a quasi-resonant nuclei may be asked, what do you want? And perhaps the child wants juice, and he says, That is a time, instead of trying to get him to say juice better, that is a time to accept what he says as the word juice. So, for example, if you know he wants juice and you say to him, what do you want? And he says, you can say, oh, juice, right. Okay, I'll get you the juice. Now, that's fine to do as long as you know what he wants. Where we run into trouble, of course, is where we don't know what he wants, and that's where a picture communication system or a sign language system dovetails with the work that we're talking about here. What we're talking about in this program is how to facilitate sound development, and we're not doing it to the exclusion of the other techniques that the child is using in order to gain communicative skill. So what we're talking about is techniques to develop the voice and the speech voice while the child is also learning to communicate in a variety of other ways.